activities and qualities of Nusharabara. And as we see, they can be, those qualities can be misinterpreted because the same qualities apply to a madman and at the same time they also apply to the most exalted spiritual person. So it becomes a little confusing sometimes when we look at these great devotees. And therefore, we're warned that we should not try to judge these devotees at all, because by doing so we commit offense. So the what is the quality of these exalted persons? We find scriptural descriptions sometimes of the exalted devotees, and here is a practical description. So, for instance, in Nectar Devotion, it discusses the different grades of devotees. So we have a person doing sadhana bhakti, we have a person on the stage of bhava, and we have a person on the level of prema. So Rupa Goswami spends quite a lot of time detailing the qualities and activities of a person doing sadhana bhakti. So he hears and chants and remembers, he has all sorts of activities, etc. So then they're quite easy to classify or describe those activities. And, when he describes the person on bhava bhakti, he gives up 13 anubhavas or actions or qualities of that devotee, which are also sensible, more senses. Detached from material things, he's absorbed in chanting the holy name, he's absorbed in hearing about pastimes of the Lord, he has longing for the Lord, so qualities like that. And then when he describes, he goes to the person in prema, then he describes the how you get to prema and the qualities of prema in general, the definition of prema, etc. But then he just mentions that it's very difficult or impossible to describe the characteristics and activities of a person in prema. So therefore, he doesn't spend one sentence to describe them. You get so much descriptions of the person in sadhana bhakti and a little less for the person in bhava bhakti. When he comes to the prema bhakti, then he just says one sentence. You cannot describe it. So, in other words, the higher one ascends in the process of bhakti, the more it is difficult to describe that person. And the activities he does may contradict our conception of even the devotee. And therefore, we can't really classify that person at all. The we'll find the description also in the Madhuri Kadambali, which describes each stage from Shraddha to Sadhana Bhakti, Vajna Kriya, Anarkina Vritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Sakti, and then Bhava and then Prema. So we see as Krishna Chakrabarti begins to describe those different devotees as we get into from Ruchi to Sakti and we get to Bhava, and then to prema, the person is more and more absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. Until he's completely absorbed in those pastimes. And consequently, he has no awareness of everything in this material world. So in bhava, it's often like that. And in prema, it's completely like that. So he's unaware of the material world. And therefore, it's very difficult for a person who's in the material world when he sees him to understand what he's doing, because he doesn't act like a normal person. He's completely forgotten this world. So here we have an extreme example of this. Bharata became Jagbharata and then was determined not to get attached to anything. At the same time, he was completely attached to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, he was completely detached from everything. So it describes here, whatever was offered, he would eat. And if nobody offered anything, he didn't eat. And he didn't judge the food. This is good food or bad food. He simply ate it. Yeah? Whatever cloth was there, he would wear that cloth. He would lie on the ground and go to sleep on the ground, very simply. He didn't wash his body. And people would talk to him, he wouldn't answer. And so they thought he was deaf or dumb or whatever, dull. they didn't give him much respect. So in this last verse, it describes that he was like a jewel covered up by dirt. So no one could understand his exalted spiritual nature. And instead, they thought he was just a madman or a dullard or whatever, with no common sense to even keep his body. But actually, he was an exalted, great exalted devotee to the Lord. So no one could detect that. We find a similar case with Sukadeva Goswami, who was described there in the first canto that he came into the arena of Parikshit Maharaj, and he had no clothing on, and he was followed by women and children who were making fun of him. I think he was a madman also, because he was walking around like not talking to anybody. So, similar case, completely absorbed in the Lord, and therefore had no concern for his material body or the people of this world. So, in the third Vedanta, there, Vishnu Chakravarti describes a little bit of that mentality of the person. He is so absorbed in the Lord that he takes no interest in his family members or society or what they think or the rules of society. Not because he wants to disturb people, but simply because he's absorbed in relishing his own work. So it's not that he's deliberately harassing people or whatever, but rather he's simply so absorbed in the Lord that he's unaware of his physical surroundings or society and obligations to society. That's a very exalted stage. So we cannot imitate that stage artificially. Some people may do that to get respect, or to get worship, or to get fame. And people will say, oh, he's such a great yogi because he's so detached from everything, standing on one leg or whatever like that. People may perform great austerities or whatever to get worship and respect from people. But that is not the intention here. These exalted devotees are not trying to be austere to get respect from anybody. Just the opposite. They have no awareness of other people at all. A very exalted stage. So people who are not on the stage should not imitate that, which is usually imitation for a personal profit. We have a gradual process of detachment from the material world. This is called Sahaj Vairagya, or natural renunciation. That means that we don't artificially renounce things, but we have certain rules for engaging our senses and using our senses in this material world. We also call this Yukta Vairagya. Detachment by engagement of the senses. And so instead of stopping the senses from eating or sleeping or whatever, we engage the senses. How do you do that without developing material attachment? We engage the senses for Krishna. So the more we can engage our senses for Krishna, then the less we are engaging our senses in mind. So then, this is a good way in which we can progress in spiritual life. So we engage our senses as much as possible in the service of Krishna, and consequently less opportunity for engagement in mind. So when we engage the senses in Krishna, It is not a measure of activity. It's devotional service. It's bhakti. And bhakti destroys all contamination, all karma. It doesn't create karma, it destroys it. So this is the unique nature of activities of bhakti. They don't create karma, but they destroy karma. And normal activities create more karma. That's all they do. But the activities of bhakti destroy karma completely. Plus, they increase our bhakti, they increase our attraction to Krishna. So this is the process by which we advance. And when one advances in bhava and prema, then naturally one becomes completely detached and one will act in this manner. However, at this stage, there are some persons who are very high, but they don't act like this. So we see exalted devotees like Dhruva or Akrishya or Yudhisthira and Pandavas. They were in prema. But they were not like this. They were wandering around in the streets. So Yudhisthira was a king. Parikshit was a king. They did not renounce. So that is also a possibility that sometimes the great devotees, that even though they're very attractive and absorbed in the Lord, they may struggle with some struggle to maintain the normal appearance, to be normal in this world. Why would they do this? To teach people. So therefore, it is said that some devotees are not really attached to doing all these duties in material life, karma, yoga, all of this, but they do it to teach other people that they should not artificially try to renounce. They should go through the gradual process. And so therefore, if they're not qualified for bhakti, they do karma yoga. So the great devotees sometimes teach people by that. And Krishna himself does so. He also teaches people in the same way, following regular garment, etc., and acting like a king, even though he doesn't act like that. So, therefore, some exalted devotees who are completely attached to the Lord and prema, they may act not like this, but like ordinary devotees on a lower level. So we should not mistake them under that. Oh look, they're obliged to go to their kanishas. They're very exalted. They're doing that simply to teach other people. That's all. So those who are not at that level, those who are not at bhava or prema, that is their sadhana, then they should not act like this. They should be following a normal conduct in society, etc., in most cases. But still, even then we have those who are renounced. They may not be a prema or a bhava, but they have a tendency for renunciation or detachment. And so therefore they're not involved in family life, they do not get married. So we have on the one hand sannyasis, or in Lord Chaitanya's movement we have the Babaji's. So they are supposed to be qualified by detachment. They may not be at the highest level of bhakti, but they have some detachment, and so they practice a renounced way of life. Which may be somewhat similar to this. But somewhat similar to this also. But they're not at that highest level. But that's not so common. So therefore, most of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya did not renounce. They were practicing household life. So if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see the list of all those devotees. Most of them were grihasthas and living in Navadvipa or in parts of Bengal or in Puri or wherever. And they had their occupation, whatever it was, Brahmins or Vaishya or Kshatriya or whatever, carried out their regular duties, raised their families, and they were also devotees of the Lord. Of course, many of those also were on the level of prayer. they were carrying out, again, their regular duties to help people. But other than those, then we have the regular devotees who also carry out their activities in a similar manner. So they do not artificially renounce everything, and they practice devotional service and go on with their activities of this world. So what are those activities they follow? They follow the activities of the Varnashrama system. But sometimes the activities of the Varnashrama system may not be so favorable to bhakti. So we have worship of devatas, worship of pitras, and things like this, encouragement of increasing your family members and enjoying nicely in this material world, you know, Svargaloka, things like this. So that's not encouraging for bhakti at all. So therefore, those elements of the Varnashrama system are not encouraged. Rather, worship of Supreme Lord is encouraged, rather than worship of devatas. No goal of trying to enjoy the material world, rather the goal of Krishna Prema. So the devotee can follow those steps of Varnashrama, but he doesn't get involved in the goals, the material goals of Varnashrama, just arta and kama. And instead tries to offer everything to the Supreme Lord and make it devotional. So that way the household devotee can carry out his life and progressive bhakti, and same time not have to renounce everything. So that's the general system of in the Vajrayana's movement, no artificial renouncing, but according to qualification. And the process of bhakti is open for everybody and it's effective for everybody. So there's no present need to artificially renounce. So here the example of Jadvarana is here not to encourage people to renounce in this way. What we show is complete absorption in the Supreme Lord. We don't try to imitate that. There's also the story of Rishabhadev. So Rishabhadev also was something like this. He had behind him like a stone. He would sit there, and if food came, he would eat. If it didn't come, he didn't eat. He didn't respond to people. So he is famous because he inspired the Jains, who also practice this type of austerities and whatever like that. However, this is not something that everybody is encouraged to do. Everybody cannot renounce in the same way. So it's artificial that people take to the practice of acting like a stone when they're not qualified to do so. So therefore, it's not a process for everybody. So Rishabhadev himself actually is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, but he's setting that example for a few people, not for everybody. Therefore, when we read these stories, we have to understand them in their proper context. One mistake an advanced devotee because he does not act according to the normal modes. So someone like Jadvarana did not follow the rules of the Varnashrama system. His father could not teach him anything. And it says here, well, he had a Brahman thread because his father put it on him and he didn't take it off, but it was all black. And he never took a bath. He never washed himself. So the Brahman was supposed to wash at least 3 times a day, bathe himself and put it in whatever. And he didn't wash himself ever. Never changed his thread, never washed his body, never did anything. So he was completely different from the normal person, and therefore people said he is a Brahma Bandhu, he's a fallen Brahma. And this is that was said to criticize him as being a very unqualified person. Later it is said that they didn't find any use for him, so they put him out in the fields as a scarecrow to keep the birds away from the crops. So people disrespected him, even his own brothers disrespected him. When his father was alive, his father protected him. When his father passed away, then his brothers were there, and they had no respect at all, and they simply thought he's a madman or whatever. But nevertheless, he was very exalted, but they did not see that. Even though they were brothers and intimately associated with him. So this indicates that it may be difficult to see the exalted devotee and appreciate him. And especially if we're not closely associated with him. Even closely associated with Bharat and Janbhar, they couldn't understand who he was. His brothers, his own brothers. So, therefore, that's why Rupa Goswami said, you cannot describe him, and therefore you should not judge such a person. And we may find fault. So we can criticize Janbhar. Why is he bad? That's you have to go back. You have to be clean. It's the rule of bhakti. Sadhana bhakti. You have to take a bath. And you're not taking a bath. Therefore, how can you be a devotee? And so, from our gross viewpoint, then we may criticize in many ways. And not only Janbhar, but others as well. Even Nityananda Prabhu, he's called Avadhuti, which means it's similar. Avadhuti means similar type of person. Unpredictable what they'll do. And he made great the conventions of the Varnashram system. We don't act in an ordinary way. There's rules to follow, he doesn't follow the rules. And so that was also another rule. And then people may criticize also. So, therefore, we have to be very careful. But it says these are rather rare. They're rare to find such a person. But nevertheless, we need to be very, very careful that we don't. And then you would criticize in those exalted devotees simply because of our blindness. We don't understand their nature. The same can be applied to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we look at him as he progressed in life after he grew up and then he was teaching and then he got a bit of his diksha and then he became more and more involved in the diksha. And then he went to sannyas, and then he went to Puri. And all along, his ecstasies kept increasing and increasing. And when he was in Puri, then as he stayed there, again, the ecstasies increase and increase. His absorption in pastimes of Radha and Krishna kept increasing. And consequently, his awareness of the material world completely was absent in many cases. So that people may also think, oh, Lord Chaitanya is a madman. Because sometimes he's shouting, and sometimes he's dancing, sometimes he's crying, sometimes he's falling on the ground, like a madman. So, of course, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya understood his ecstasy and prema, but I just look at him and they think, oh, this is the madman. So, in this, or Supreme Lord is not acting like this. So, we can mistake the Supreme Lord for a madman, which is just a regular devotee who's a name, Pramana, and we'll think he's a madman also. So we should not always go by the externals. But, of course, such a person is also quite rare. You're very fine, such an exalted person. So, on a lower level, we have our regular devotees in sadhana bhakti, and they are expected to conform to certain rules and regulations. Some devotees say, well, I'm beyond that. Usually they're below that if they're not following. So, we have rules and regulations to follow, and these are for our advantage, for our benefit. So, by following these rules, we can advance in devotional service. The person who is on prema, of course, may not follow these rules at all, in the case you see Janbhar not bathing and whatever, and not talking to anyone properly. But for one who is sadhana bhakti, then we follow all these different rules of blindness and rules of conduct, kind of Vaishnava etiquette, etc. We have all set of rules to follow. And if you don't follow those rules, then well, gets criticized. So those persons, we should, he can't give the flat line on this level here. We can't criticize people. Exalting books, you've done far out. No. Don't sadhana. So we have to follow those rules on the level of sadhana, where it lies to follow them. However, as one advances, some of the rules may not be so important anymore. So as one goes through Nishita Ruchi Vasakti, then again, the devotee may forget to do some of these rules there, and the people start criticizing him also. But that's because he's more advanced and his rules are no longer important. So again, we have to be a little bit careful with criticizing those devotees. But nevertheless, most of the devotees are not on that level, so therefore they should be following those, the rules, the standards properly. And if they're not coming up to the standard, then it's a sign of some sort of weakness in their devotional service. And, so we should be careful in judging people. We have to somewhat be able to judge their spiritual status, and therefore, based on that, then we can criticize or not criticize. Okay, any question now?
Take the shelter of the spiritual master.
Well, it doesn't really describe even when he is Bharat, about his guru or anything, but we do assume he did have a guru when he was Bharat, king, etc. We generally did get some kind of priest was there, get some sort of spiritual guidance, whatever. And then he became a deer, because a deer he had no guru, obviously. And then he became Jadvarat. So the only guru he had was his father, who gave him the Gayatri Mantra. So in that sense, there is some sort of Vedic Diksha given to him. But then he didn't want to chant the mantra properly. He refused to chant the Om Guru Vasaha that properly. So he couldn't even get proper Vedic Diksha, what to speak of Vaishnava Diksha. But it appears in many periods of time previous. This is actually from Swayambhuva Mandakara period, somewhere in that area, quite millions of years ago. Sometimes the Vaishnava Diksha wasn't there, but they did have the Vedic Diksha, which is the Upanayan and gave the Gayatri Mantra, etc. So the father tried to give him, so technically he was like the guru, but he wasn't very good disciple. He couldn't chant the mantra. But because he was so advanced, we could say that was not really necessary. So the diksha was not really necessary. Of course, then we said, well, they do have shiksha, but we don't see anybody around there to give him shiksha. But we do understand that he had reached the stage of bhava when he was far. So again, he had already got some shiksha previous to that. So we can assume that this is a carryover from, because he had memory in his previous life also, probably a little bit, at least the influence was there. So therefore, he already accrued all knowledge anyway, through that smart. So. But again, it's an exception case.
In Jainism, sometimes we see people, you know, celebration where people announce and they throw diamonds on the streets and
all Sunday comes on, then they come. Yeah, and then they party.
Yeah. So in that case, how far can we say there is a true renunciation, or what is the cause of the renunciation?
In that case?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that he's taking the diamonds, it's the parents who are celebrating it, that's all. So. which is one that's maybe good, because usually it's the opposite. If somebody renounces, you lock them up in the room and don't let them go. So if they're willing to let them go and practice spiritual life, that's going to be a good sign. Maybe it's a little extravagant that they celebrate in such a way, but at least it's a sign that they do recognize that advancing spiritual life is more important than just living in the household or enjoying the material world. So a good aspect of it.
Thank you. Maharaj, you said that Bharat Maharaj, he had been like a dumb, blind, and like just like a unique person, like he didn't reply and he was being critiqued by everyone and he didn't react. So we connected was like we are sometimes ill treated or mistreated by many people, like friends or like just other people. So then how do we react to such situations?
Why we're treated like Jadavarata is treated? How do we react?
Yeah.
Oh, well, of course we're not, we don't act deaf and blind and whatever like him, but Lord Chaitanya teaches us that that we should be humble in the blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. So if we get mistreated by others, we shouldn't get too upset. That's tolerance, like the tree. So the tree is growing, and then people come along and pull off the branches, or they pick the fruit of the leaves, and the tree does not complain, just accepts it. And if the wind blows, it blows the tree this way and that way, the tree does not complain. So in the material world, we get treated nicely or mistreated, somehow disrespected by others. And that's to be expected because it's the material world, and not every situation is perfect. So we can expect to have all sorts of different problems from living entities and human beings and even the weather or whatever, accidents, all this. But we should try to be peaceful in all these conditions, recognizing it's due to our material situation, material body, and law of karma operating. So we tolerate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj. It was a very nice class.
Maharaj, the story of Jadavarata trails off, so do we understand even better? Go ahead.
Because he was very advanced in Prema. And probably the last we see here about him is that he taught Rahugana, King Rahugana, and he gave him some very good instruction. So, even though he was so detached in the world, that he became very compassionate suddenly. So that shows his exalted nature also, that though he was so hidden and detached from everything, he was willing to give great mercy to someone who actually offended him, insulted him quite badly. He made a curious comment on everything. But nevertheless, somehow Jadavarata was very merciful. So that shows the great nature of the devotee.
And also with Yudhishthira Maharaj personalities like Prahlada, Yudhishthira, were they on the platform of Krishna Prema?
Oh yeah. Well, actually, the Pandavas are eternal associates of the Lord. And they have their own place up in the spiritual world also. And all these stories about they had to see calories and after they went up to Himalayas and Pandavas. This is kind of superficial story. Actually, the eternal associates of the Lord, so they don't have to experience hell or anything like that. So, that's how we should understand the intimate associates of Krishna. A very, very elevated devotees, and it just is in most cases. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, here, Jadavarata acting dumb, dull. We see in our teachings also that a disciple should remain like a fool in front of a spiritual master. And we tell this Mukham Karavati Vacharam, the verse, and Mahaprabhu saying, my spiritual master told that I'm like a fool in this mantra I gave. So what that exactly means that a disciple should remain like a fool in front of a spiritual master?
But that's a little bit different because also we say that the disciple should be Parivarshana. He should be inquisitive. So if you ask how to be a fool and ask all the wrong questions, the guru's not going to appreciate that very much. So we need to be a little intelligent and ask questions as well. So we can't be foolish in that sense and just be materialistic. What it does mean, it means that we understand that we have no knowledge. Okay? And therefore, we're very humble. And if we think we do have knowledge, we cannot be humble. So that's a real fool, or unqualified, or whatever. So when we say that we are, and, you know, like Rupa and Sanatana, when they came to Ajitanya with grass in their teeth, so to speak. That we are, you know, ignorant and this and that. Actually, they weren't, because they were very knowledgeable. They studied Bible when they were children, and they were great devotees already. They said, we are all fallen, ignorant, useless. So that's the proper attitude you have if you want to accept knowledge from another person. You have to have that humble attitude. So that is when it says pranipatena. So pat means to fall down. Patita is a fallen person. So pat means to fall down. And nipat means to fall down words. And pram means extremely. So when you fall down, not only physically but mentally as well. So that puts us in a lower position, which means very humble. So of course physically you do that with namaskars, but then mentally when you do the namaskar, mind has to put down also. So it's not just the body, it's the voice also. You say your prayer and your mind also has to go down. So we have to be humble physically also and mentally. Of course, that operates spiritually also, because then we're into Krishna Das. So if we don't accept that, we don't have any faith, then we can't even start the process of bhakti or get any answers from the spiritual master, because if we don't accept the basic principle that we're not the master or the servant, then nothing can happen. So naturally, we must be in that position of feeling ourselves and following that. We see in surrender that surrender has six parts, like accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable, and then one of the last ones is this karpanya, which means misery, to feel oneself very fallen and miserable and low like this. Another way of saying it is dina, to feel dina, very, you know, unqualified like that. So that's the natural part of surrender, which Jiva Goswami says is the first anga of bhakti. The nectar devotion is put quite far up, but, you know, and the main ones are, you know, here, chanting, association, living the holy vow, virtually deep, but and then sharing bhakti is later on. But the Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Siddhartha puts, of all the angas, he puts this sharing bhakti as the first. This is the first anga of bhakti. You don't do this. And part of that is this idea of great humility and dhyana. And later on in Jiva Goswami, Snati Goswami, in the Riyad Bhagavatamrita, then he notes at the end, near the end, when he's describing the exalted position of the gopis, and he says, the exalted devotees have dhyana. And the more they advance, the more it becomes prominent. So the most advanced devotees are the gopis. So they have the most humility. They have the most dhyana. So they always consider themselves the most fallen and completely unqualified for Krishna. So that's their highest devotees. So it gradually manifests more and more. So it's, you can say, an essential element of the body itself, that feeling. So if we don't have anything in the beginning, we're not going to have it at the end also, but it's essential. So therefore, it's an essential part of bhakti itself. So, yeah, foolishness that doesn't make that sense. On the other hand, we say that you have to be inquisitive and you have to get knowledge. And the whole purpose of the guru ultimately is to give you knowledge. So if you don't want to accept that knowledge, you're capable of accepting it, then you can't be a disciple. Because without that knowledge, you can't advance. We have diksha, we have shiksha. So the shiksha is the important element. And if we don't get that knowledge, then how we can do anything in devotional service? if we can't distinguish Krishna from Devadas or Krishna from material beings, if we can't distinguish the Atma from the body, if we can't distinguish pure bhakti from mixed bhakti, all if we can't make these distinctions, then we can't really advance in devotional service. So we do have that intelligence also. But we are never proud of the intelligence.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the nice picture. Maharaj, Prabhupada quotes a lot of times this verse, Yasya Manumriyami. So, if Krishna favors the devotee, he takes up everything. So, what that verse actually means? So, and how we not get fearful from that statement? That means, like, if we are happy and we are everything, that means he's never favors us.
And if everything gets taken away, then he's more merciful. Well, in some cases, if Krishna finds that your material assets are an obstacle to your bhakti and you're overly attached, then you take them away. Take everything away. And then you're left with nothing, and then you surrender completely. But that's not an inevitable principle or an internal principle that Krishna takes everything away from everybody. But of course, it's in common folklore, well, I guess maybe it's there, and myself in India, they said Krishna plays his flute and takes away all your money, it blows all your money away, or something like that. So don't put a picture of Krishna in your house, all your money will go away. So, and that's, it's not inevitable. We see the opposite. Krishna gives everything. Dhruva got the whole world, and then he went up to Dhruva Loka as well. So he didn't get anything taken away from him, he got more and more. Because he got the kingdom that he wanted. We see that Gajendra was praying, releasing from the crocodile. And the Lord came and released him from the crocodile. He didn't think, okay, this is your karma. He released him. So the Lord, and people, one of the types of devotees is the one who wants money, one who is suffering and prays the Lord, get rid of suffering, another is one who needs some wealth and prays to Krishna. So the Lord responds to that often. And if they are suffering, he relieves their suffering. If they need money, he gives them money. Of course, that's mixed bhakti. But he responds to all sorts of devotees in different ways according to their particular needs, and so they advance in devotional service. So it's not that he takes everything away from everybody all the time. Certain cases may be necessary for their advancement, so they're able to do that. In other cases, if he takes it away, they may not be advanced in devotional service also, they become the opposite. And their faith is broken and they need devotional service, so they won't do it in that case.
Maharaj, when you said that Prabhuji was called Avadhut, what was the name of that devotee?
Nityananda. Yeah. So he was very irregular in his conduct. In fact, as described, he would sometimes run around naked, and then he would sit on Srivas Pandit's wife's lap like a baby. For milk or something like this, you know. Or he'd go into a liquor shop, and then everyone thought, oh, he's going to get drunk. But actually, he was going to preach like that. Or he'd jump on the ground and play with crocodiles, or all sorts of things, outlandish things. And people couldn't predict what he was going to do next. Okay, I'm sure.